We are truly living in remarkable times with remarkable people all around us. Remarkable people who can inspire us. Remarkable people who can teach us. Remarkable people who can guide us along our own journeys of exponential growth as financial brand leaders. That's why on today's episode of the Banking on Digital Growth podcast, I'm excited to welcome Guy Kawasaki and feature his new book, Think Remarkable. Welcome back to another episode of the Banking on Digital Growth podcast. I'm James Robert Lay, founder and CEO of the Digital Growth Institute, where we are on a mission to help financial brands stop losing loans and deposits by guiding them through the Banking on Digital Growth program. Before we get into today's conversation with Guy, if you are on a marketing team, a sales team, a leadership team at a financial brand, I'd like to invite you to join over 300 other growth-minded leaders in the digital growth community who are all committed to learning, connecting, and growing even better together. And you can become a member in less than 60 seconds when you visit www.digitalgrowth.com/membership. As I mentioned before, we are truly living in remarkable times. And joining me for today's conversation is Guy Kawasaki. Guy is the chief evangelist of Canva and host of the Remarkable People podcast that I highly recommend you tune into as well. He was also the chief evangelist of Apple and brand ambassador at Mercedes-Benz. Guy has recently published his 16th book, Think Remarkable, which includes insights from over 200 extraordinary people, including Jane Goodall, Carol Dweck, Steve Wozniak, among a list of many other remarkable people with remarkable thinking, doing remarkable things. And I look forward to talking through Think Remarkable, Guy's new book, to guide you on your own journey of growth at your financial brand. Welcome to the show, Guy. It is good to share time with you today.
Yeah, thank you for having me. What could be better than being on your show?
Well, before we get into what is well with the show, I want to talk about what has been good for you. You've got a new book out, Think Remarkable. Yes. And it looks like it's going well. It sounds like it's going very well. There it is. Before we get too far into that, what about you personally? Just what is good in your world right now? What's positive to start off the show on a positive note?
Wow, my world. I'm a very lucky guy. So I live in Santa Cruz, California, and I am primarily I'm chief evangelist of Canva, which is going very well. And I am a podcaster with Remarkable People, which is what led to the book Think Remarkable. And I surf a lot. I'm going to go surf today. So, you know, my life is good. My life is good. You don't have to cry any tears for me, Argentina.
Well, you know, you mentioned the idea of a chief evangelist. It reminds me of Ethan Butte. For those who are watching or listening, what is a chief evangelist? Because it's not something that we hear every day in the banking space, although I could see a chief evangelist playing an important role as we continue forward into this age of AI. What does that mean?
Well, evangelism comes from a Greek word that means bringing the good news. So I bring the good news. I brought the good news of Macintosh in my prior life. And now I'm bringing the good news of Canva, that Canva has democratized design and enabled people to be better communicators without having to learn Photoshop and Illustrator, basically.
Absolutely. But it's interesting you mentioned this idea of democratization. And you think about what has happened. Peter Diamandis has the 6 D's of digitization, democratization, demonetization, etc. When we look at what's going on right now, can be a very exciting time. It could be somewhat, for some could perceive as a very scary time, which you make a very interesting point. It could also be a remarkable time with your book,
yes.
Think Remarkable. And you have shared thinking, you have shared insights from over 200 extraordinary people. Why write the book and why now?
A big advance. I love answering that way because everybody thinks, oh, this guy's being honest.
Honesty is the best policy.
So listen, my podcast is 5 years old now. So it's now about 250 hours of episodes and 5,000 pages of transcripts. And, you know, we're very fortunate. We have people like Jane Goodall and Stacey Abrams, Steve Wozniak, Stephen Wolfram, Bob Cialdini, Katie Milkman, Angela Duckworth, Carol Dweck. I mean, just to drop some names. And so there's a lot of information and inspiration in my podcast, but nobody's going to listen to 250 hours or read 5,000 pages. So I started believing I have a moral obligation to cut that down into a bite-sized piece, and that's what it is.
You mentioned Carol Dweck, growth mindset. You opened up the book, chapter one, with this. Why is growth mindset such an important quality when it comes to thinking remarkably?
Well, I mean, basically, if you want to make a difference in the world, you have to have a growth mindset, because making a difference implies that there's change. And if there's change, there's growth. So if you have a fixed mindset and you believe in preserving the status quo, or, you know, or you believe that you are set for life, or you cannot learn anything new, you're probably not going to make a difference. And so that's where it starts. I mean, everybody who's been on my podcast has a growth mindset. Otherwise, they would not make a difference. They would not be remarkable. I mean, it is that simple.
Okay. For a financial brand leader, a banker, credit union leader, lender, I often sometimes see they look at the world maybe through more of a fixed mindset. What's the opportunity to transform that fix to growth, to continue to see new opportunities and be remarkable?
Well, I mean, I can't say I blame them, because the banking industry is so heavily regulated, right? Mm-hmm. And so that there's a lot of limitations on what you can do. But still, at the end of the day, you know, a brand is a brand, whether it's a bank or a car. And I think that certain brands are associated with certain kinds of things. Like, you know, to take a negative example, and you can cut this out of the recording, but
I will keep
it. You know, it's like hard for me to wrap my mind around trying to do business with Wells Fargo after they created millions of fake accounts, right? And like, why would you get involved with that today if you're opening up an account? I mean, I think that brand is so harmed, but yet it's there, it's doing business. So what do I know? I think that if you have a growth mindset, you try to figure out, you know, what can I do to make my bank stand out in the minds of people? And I think a lot of it is like small details. And listen, I used to be a customer of Silicon Valley Bank, so I had that mm-hmm. amazing traumatic situation. I mean, it was going to be a very bad day, yes. You know. And now that, you know, First Citizens.
Yep.
Yeah, First Citizens bought Silicon Valley Bank, and let's just say the transition is a non-trivial task to go from one thing to another. And I just think there's always these opportunities to provide better service or good service for your customers. And I'll give you a little nitpick that, you know, banks might just relate to, which sure. is that, let's say this is in the consumer banking world, because that's the world I know, right? I'm not a private equity hedge fund kind of guy. So when you know, I love the fact that you can make a mobile deposit, right? Take the picture of the front and the back and bada bing, bada bang, it's in your account. That is a beautiful, beautiful thing. But what bugs me is that I know that the picture was taken with my camera on my phone. And 6 months from now, when I want to look up that deposit for $1,000, because I need to know if that was an income or expense reimbursal, was it personal, was it, you know, does it have tax consequences? I cannot remember for the life of me, what was that $1,000 in the first week of April? Well, you know, I know that I took a picture of it and deposited it. So why isn't that picture in my photo album? Yeah. And then in 2024, I would make the case that with all this LLMs and all this AI, you know, if you can fake people's identities and fake people's voices and fake, you know, people's acting and all that, How come you're so stupid and you cannot say that? Oh, this is a picture of a check. We should put it in an album called Checks.
Right.
So that 6 months from now, I can go to his, you know, photo albums and say, okay, let me look at the Checks album. And also there's a business card album. I mean, you know, like, why can't there be that level of recognition? So like 6 months from now, I can look at all my pictures that were mobile deposits are in one album called Checks. Or I don't understand that. Well, why can't that be?
I appreciate your thinking, and it is just that. It is thinking here. And I think a lot of times we get so stuck in the doing and the old previous paradigm that and I'm gonna play on words here. It's hard to think different.
And you know a lot
about thinking differently.
Well, but I mean, you know, so why does this occur? Why? This is a very simple example, right? Now, maybe there's some banking regulation that says, you know, if you take a picture of a mobile deposit, it cannot go into the general photo selection because of, you know, some Glass-Steagall Act or something. I don't know. But I bet you it's more that the executives of the bank, they don't use mobile deposits. I mean, you know, they get like everything is direct pay. Everything is wire transfer. Everything is, you know, they haven't touched a paper check for 20 years. So like they have no idea, like the pain in the ass to look for a deposit 6 months old that, you know, you took a picture of, because they don't take pictures and they don't make mobile deposits. So, which comes to one of my theories in my book that, yeah, you know, if you want to be remarkable and make a difference, and by that I mean grow, you know, one of the ways of growth strategy is go and see how your customers are using your product. Go and see how guy is making a mold deposit. Or even better, go and be guy. Go and, you know, have your first citizens mobile check deposit system and go deposit your own checks and see what it's like to, when your accountant asks you in 6 months, what was that $1,000 for? And you say, I don't know, but I know I took a picture. Well, I'll just have my personal assistant call his personal assistant at headquarters and find a copy of that picture. Now, that's not how guy works. I mean,
it's where empathy comes back into play and can go a long way. When we look at leaning into people and connecting with people, at a deeper human level, as I mentioned before, you've had 200 plus conversations. You mentioned it's 5,000 pages and you've been able to distill this down. Thinking about your own remarkable journey, who has been a remarkable person that has helped guide you along your journey of growth that you've met?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you something. I can give you like a real bifurcation of examples. So at one level, Carol Dweck, mother of the growth mindset, she definitely changed my perspective. You know, to wit, I took up ice hockey at 44 and surfing at 60, which is roughly 34 and 50 years too late. But that was because I started embracing the growth mindset. Like, you know, why shouldn't I take up hockey having never skated in my life, or surfing having never surfed in my life? So Carol Dweck is at one level. There was another book called If You Want to Write by Brenda Uhland, and it's obviously for writers, but it's for any creative process. So if you are an artist or a musician, if you are just trying to, like, if you could be a creative cook and you would enjoy If You Want to Write. Basically, it's saying that if you want to write. You know, you don't need a PhD in English. You don't need to take a course in creative writing. Just if you want to write, for crying out loud, just write. So that's at one extreme of the influences. But then I'll tell you something. There's a sixth grade teacher in my life. This is, probably 60 years ago. And I was from a lower middle class part of Honolulu, Hawaii. And I was in the public school system, which is not that great a system in Hawaii. And this sixth grade teacher told my parents to take me out of the public school system, put me in a private college prep system because I had potential to go to college. And, you know, knock on wood, my parents listened to her. Knock on wood, my parents were able to make the sacrifice for me to go to a private school. So I went from this track to a private school. The private school led me, I don't know how, by some miracle, I went to Stanford. Stanford, I met the guy who eventually hired me at Apple. And from Apple, you know, and the rest is history, as they say. So as I look back on my life, you know, one of the people who changed the arc of my life was this remarkable sixth grade teacher. And, you know, you're never going to hear her name. She's not Steve Jobs or Elon Musk or Jane Goodall or Bob Cialdini or, you know, Stacey Abrams, but she was remarkable for me.
Well, when you talk about that, that reminds me of Miss Spradley. She was my 10th grade teacher, and she was the one who turned me on to the power of story and narrative and writing. I never thought that I would write a book, yet alone a second book that is about to come out myself. But it all comes back to Miss Spradley providing that path forward. And I know you heap a lot of praise on teachers in your book. I mean, I think about Carol Dweck and her work with growth mindset. That has had a positive impact on my family. My kids are in a program. It's called the Connect program at school. And for the first 6 weeks, when they enter into fourth grade, they do nothing but talk about growth mindset. And I know if I had that experience back then, it would have totally reshaped and reframed how I thought about growth and failure. Yeah. I'm grateful for that.
They see it. I hope my book is used in that kind of program, right? I mean, because I lay the whole thing out, how to you know, embrace the growth mindset, the grit mindset, and the grace mindset. And
which are the three points of framework in the book. Why growth, grit, and grace? Because I always like a good way words framed together, because I can remember stuff like that.
Okay, so listen, I love tricolons. I love tricolons, right? I came, I saw, I conquered, right? And then I love alliteration. And not only is this a tricolon with an alliteration, it is a two-letter alliteration. It's G and R, not just G, right? So that's one of the things I'm most proud about in this book, that I could find alliteration, tricolon, two letters.
Yes.
And I attribute some of that to ChatGPT. ChatGPT helped me find words that began with GR.
Well, it's interesting you bring up ChatGPT, because we are entering and moving further into this age of AI. I have never asked an author this before. You'll be the very first one.
Go for it.
Did you use AI to write the book?
Oh, absolutely. I did. Absolutely. And you know what? Okay. So we're going to talk about this for a while, because like in my mind, what I owe my readers is the best book I can write. And the best book I can write would utilize AI. It would utilize AI as a research assistant. It helped me find examples that I would have never come across. I wanted to explain the concept of switching careers. So I needed well-known people who switch careers in a big way. And it told me about Julia Child. I had no idea that Julia Child was a spook until her 30s when she changed to French cooking. That example would not be in my book were it not for ChatGPT. And so I use it as a research assistant. I use it to help summarize things for me at the end of every chapter. I use it for checking grammar and stuff. I use something called QuillBot. And like I said, I mean, to use a cooking analogy, since I brought up Julia Child, when you go to a restaurant, it seems to me you just want the best meal possible, right? So who walks into a restaurant and says, I want the best meal possible, but you cannot have used a microwave. You cannot have used a food processor. You could not have used an electric knife. It has to be all, you know, artisanal knife, artisanal egg beater that you, you know, use your hand. You cannot use anything. That's the kind of meal I want. I mean, I'm being facetious, but you just want good food. You just want a good book. And if ChatGPT helped me write a good book, God bless you. I'll use another analogy. let's say that you want to hear a good speech, right? So, you know, you're like thinking Martin Luther King, John F. Kennedy, you know, Barack Obama. And then guess what? You know, I hate to burst your bubble. There's no Santa Claus. And all those people, well, I don't know about Martin Luther King, but I interviewed Barack Obama's speech maker. So, you know, I hate to tell you, but Barack Obama did not write all his speeches all by himself. So is there any difference between Barack Obama using a really talented speechwriter or using ChatGPT to help him write a speech? I see no difference. The bottom line is the speech remarkable or not?
You bring some very interesting points, because in the financial services space, I know AI is somewhat contentious right now. There's been discussion, debates back and forth. Alvin Toffler, back in the 1970s, wrote that the illiterate, since we're talking education, the illiterate of the 21st century will not be those who cannot read and write, but those who cannot learn, unlearn, and relearn. I think about my kids, and we're already collaborating with ChatGPT. My daughter has written 2 books published through Canva, actually printed through Canva, as part of a GT project. And
she's 10 years old.
It's mind blowing to see how her thinking is now being reshaped in a whole different context. And so what would you say to those that are thinking, and this is not hyperbole, I have had a CFO in an executive meeting basically say AI is cheating. They would rather have their team do the work the old school way. And I'm like, well, wait a minute. When we were in school, did you use a calculator, like a TI-82 or anything like that? And he said, yeah. I go, well, I was the kid learning to use the TI-82 and program the formulas in there, so I didn't have to actually think harder. Is that cheating? And I was like, no, I didn't cheat. I just figured out a way to do something even better. What would you say to those who think that AI, and it's a matter of perspective, if they think AI is cheating?
I'd say life is passing you by. I mean, you're exactly right, right? I mean, if you use a HP 92 or a TI, I mean, you know, if I go to your bank, are you using abacuses? I mean, how do you
seashells?
I don't know. Are you writing on dried papyrus? I mean, what are you using? I mean, I think you owe it to your customers and the shareholders to use the best technology you can. And, yep. You know, like if I were a bank and if I got to believe that you're already doing this, but, you know, you have got to be able to apply AI to discover patterns of fraud, right? Patterns of fraud AI can instantly identify. I don't know how you would do that, you know, with your abacus. I mean, I don't understand. Like, oh, wait, something's wrong here. Oh, something's wrong. I mean, there's fraud here in Columbus, Ohio. I mean, why not use AI?
Is it because change is hard?
Well, I mean, I guess so, but you know, like your daughter is growing up with AI. She's never going to go back. There is no going back, right? I mean, it's like my kids grew up with phones. What am I going to tell them? You know, phones are ruining your mind. Go back to a telegraph. I'm going to buy you a dumb phone. It's going to have 10 keys in it. I just think, you know, we just need to get on board. Now, don't get me wrong. Bad things can happen with AI. Sure. And ChatGPT can make stuff up. But I mean, like a lot of the negativism about AI, they go down in this hole. Like they say, well, what happens if the Russian LLM is angry with the American LLM and decides to start a nuclear war, and the American LLM sees the Russian LLM doing that? So it sends its missiles, and now it's the end of the world, you know. So AI is dangerous because it could take over and it would start, you know, firing nuclear missiles. Well, I hate to tell you, but I think that there's much greater risk of Putin and Kim Jong-un and Donald Trump firing missiles at each other than 2 LLMs. I mean, if I had to make a choice, I would rather trust ChatGPT than, you know, your fascist dictator of the day.
Yeah. You know, when you think about this idea of thinking and thinking remarkably, think different. It was an iconic campaign with Apple. What inspired you to connect the book to the Think Different campaign?
Well, at an intellectual level, I think that thinking different was fine in 1997, where you had to think different, like Picasso or Amelia Earhart or Richard Branson or Martin Luther King or Albert Einstein. I mean, back then, if you were thinking different, you know, maybe you were using a Macintosh. But if you were thinking the same, you would have just jumped on the Windows bandwagon. So that was the whole point of that campaign, right? Think different, be innovative, be a visionary, you know, go against the grain, get out of your box. But I think that now thinking different, it doesn't have the value of the social implications and the environmental implications. And so we got to go beyond thinking different to thinking remarkably. Like what makes a difference? What's remarkable, not just different? You can be different and bad. We want you to be remarkable. It's a higher standard. It's a taller fence.
This quote that you referenced, the commencement quote from Steve Jobs, it's actually come up in my field of vision within the past couple of weeks, a couple of times, being able to connect the dots, looking backwards.
Right.
How have you seen dots connected backwards in regards to your own journey of remarkable growth?
Okay. I've already told you a part of the ultimate looking backward dot connection. All right. So I'll give you a real tangible example. The foreword in my book is by Jane Goodall. The Jane Goodall. Now, in my humble opinion, if you were writing a book about change and making a difference, there is nobody in the world who would be better for that forward than Jane Goodall, right? She's the mother of all change and making a difference people in the world.
How'd y'all become friends?
Well, okay, I'm going to tell you this. Okay, so now, just to recap the story, sixth grade teacher tells my parents to put me in his private school. Parents listen. I get into Stanford because of that private school. I meet Mike Boych, who gets me into Apple, who, you know, I'm successful at Apple. I become visible. Now, fast forward 20 years, and the director of TEDx Palo Alto writes to me and says, you know, I know of you, guy. I don't know you personally. I'm a Macintosh user. Other people that know you said that you'd be a great person. I have Jane Goodall has agreed to be present or to make an appearance at TEDx Palo Alto. I want you on stage to interview her. So arguably connecting the dots backwards, because of that sixth grade teacher at Kalihi Elementary School convinced my parents to put me into a private school. That's how I got to be on stage with Jane Goodall. So now I'm friends with Jane Goodall, and we have done a lot of things for each other, you know. Whenever she calls, the answer is yes. And whenever I call, I honestly tell you, I think she always says yes. I asked her to write my foreword, to record a video for me, to record a video for my podcast. And she always says yes. And you have to understand, this is a 90-year-old person who travels 300 days a year, 300 days a year, right? I mean, and when Jane Goodall travels, she's not, you know, just traveling on a Gulfstream, Taylor Swift style, pulls in, limo pulls up. She goes to the Ritz-Carlton, you know, hangs out, gives a one-hour talk, gets back in a Gulfstream and goes back. I mean, she's working from morning to night, meeting with kids and fundraising and doing all this stuff. I could not do 300 days of that kind of travel. I don't know if I could do 10 days of that kind of travel. So anyway, so she says yes and all this. And so this is a story of connecting the dots. Now, I'm being completely facetious, but, you know, there's no way anybody could say, okay, right now, you know, you listen to that sixth grade elementary school teacher because someday it's going to lead you to be friends with Jane Goodall. hard to imagine, you know. That. And so, you know, what's the consequences of you only can connect the dots looking backwards? Well, I think that This means that you should do a lot of sampling because you just never know who is going to be the person that years from now is going to be the game changer for you. So you need to meet a lot of people, a lot of diverse people. And you also, I think, you need to default to yes. So, and stop thinking about optimizing your current situation, achieving work-life balance and all that. Just keep saying yes. Just say yes and figure out how to do it. And then by saying yes, you'll have, you know, more opportunities. You'll have more data. You'll have more exposure to the world. And someday it'll all pay off. So just default to yes.
Meeting more people, making these human connections, I think will be an important practice, particularly for leaders in the age of AI. Community banking leaders, for example, having conversations with entrepreneurs in their local market, hypothetical example.
Yes.
Recording the conversation, unlocking the human story of growth. How were you able to make so many good human connections to have these conversations with remarkable people for your podcast that then led to the book here?
Well, I mean, honestly, I just lead a charmed life. I'm very lucky. So I got a lot of exposure with my work for Macintosh. So, you know, listen, I got on a tsunami and I wrote it, right? Mm. And it'd be an interesting question. You know, what if I were the Windows evangelist? I probably would be richer. I would have made more money at Microsoft. But I don't think I would have nearly the connections that I did because, you know, I don't know, between you and me, cool people don't use Windows machines. So what can I say? But so, you know, it's listen, there was no plan. There was no grand scheme about how you major in psych at Stanford so you can get a job at Apple being an evangelist, which will lead to Jane Goodall, which will lead to podcasts, you know, which will lead to books. There was no plan at all. I did a lot of sampling. I got interested in stuff and I pursued interests. I got interested in podcasting, so I pursued podcasting. I mean, I never had this real plan. I hate to burst all these people's bubbles, but man, I'm just been lucky, and I am lucky, but I also work my ass off. I love to work. I got grit, man. I'm Angela Duckworth's poster boy.
Let's talk about grit and Angela Duckworth. And I mean, even Jane Goodall, like you mentioned, I remember being a kid in the 80s watching Jane Goodall on National Geographic, like VHS tapes, and just learning through that whole experience there. When you think about the world that we're moving into and mental models, for example, we'll just use the word retirement. I joined an entrepreneurial program with a bunch of entrepreneurs that look at retirement from a different perspective. Like, there is no retirement. As long as you're able to create value, as long as you're able to make connections.
Right.
Dan Sullivan is leading this, and Dan he's turning 80 this year, and he's worked with some really, you know, world-class entrepreneurs. What do we have to rethink here when it comes to this idea of retirement, being remarkable? I mean, even like looking ahead on your own journey of growth, what do you want to be remembered for?
Okay, I can answer that with two words. I want to be remembered for empowering people. I want to be remembered for empowering people with my writing, my speaking, my podcasting, you know, my books, my articles, my videos, whatever, my investing, my whatever it takes. So I have this theory that in the first third of your life, you're overworked and underpaid. In the second third of your life, you're overpaid and underworked. And in the third third of your life, it's about paying back. So I'm in that third third of my life, and it's all about paying back. Because I love the concept of noblesse oblige, which is to say that, you know, you have this obligation and, you know, you need to be a gentleman about it and pay back because you were lucky. So you need to help other people be lucky too, because it ain't just because you're such a wonderful person. Lots of things had to fall in line. Lots of people had to work to help you. So you owe it to the universe to help the universe back.
Yes. It's all the interconnectedness that
we're
one in the greater narrative here. Robert Cialdini, you mentioned him before, and I wanted to get your perspective on this. I've been asking a lot of financial brand marketers and their leadership teams lately of, well, what is marketing? If you could define marketing in one word, and the response of, they keep coming back. It's very tactical. It's ads, it's emails, it's social media, it's brands. And I'm like, I don't know what has driven me to this perspective, but I'm like, well, isn't it just influence? And I know, you know, when we think about Robert and his work, why are the principles that he teaches of influence, of persuasion, they're timeless and they're enduring, yes, that I think will continue forward as we're entering into this whole new perspective of this age of AI?
Well, I think, you know, Robert's book, Influence, is required reading. I mean, at any level. I mean, it basically, you know, I love this kind of behavioral economic social psychology that explains how the human mind works. And now, don't get me wrong, you could use some of Bob's theories to do bad things, but you know, that comes with the territory for any technology, any body of knowledge. But I just happen to believe that, you know, in life, you are always trying to influence people. It could be for a raise. It could be to get hired. It could be to get your kid to clean up his room. It could be to get an upgrade to first class. I mean, you know, you're always influencing and persuading if your lips are moving. So I think that people like Robert Cialdini, and another person to watch is Katie Milkman. Katie Milkman, I swear, is the next Robert Cialdini. And these like, my book is full of stories from Katie Milkman and Robert Cialdini about how to influence and persuade, because part of making a difference is you got to influence and persuade people to change and to grow. And, you know, there are techniques to do this.
As we start wrapping up here, give you an opportunity to influence those who are watching and listening to do just that, to change and to grow, to be remarkable, to think remarkable. What is something small that they can do right now at this moment to do just that, to think remarkable?
They can do right now at this moment that small.
One thing.
To think remarkable.
Or to begin, if they have not before.
Let's see. I would say, of course, the marketer in me wants to say, go buy the book. That's your first step. But that's not what you're asking.
We'll take it.
I would say that. Okay, so here's something everybody can do. You can go and Google Carol Dweck, D-W-E-C-K. And there are many articles about her. So you could either buy her book, Mindset, or you could read, like, there's got to be some Harvard Business Review summary or Fast Company summary or whatever of her theories. That would be step one. Go read about the growth mindset. You don't need to buy my book. You don't need to do that. You can just start there by understanding the growth mindset. And I could tell you something, that when an author tells you to read somebody else's book, there is no higher form of praise.
Absolutely. So go get Carol's book. But for those who are watching and listening, where can they get Guy's book?
Well, I mean, it's kind of hard not to get my book. I mean, it's kind of everywhere. I mean, you know, Wiley is a great publisher with great distribution. So listen, if you are not going to make a difference and not be remarkable because you couldn't find my book, probably you weren't going to make a difference and be remarkable anywhere. It's not that hard to find my book. Now, I have a plan B for you. I just put it in the chat. So there are people who, you know, don't read, don't like to read. And although there is an Audible version of my book, but there are people who, you know, can't afford it, whatever. Because it's not about optimizing book sales. So this is a link to a Canva course. That's a free Canva course about how to be remarkable. And Jane Goodall made a custom video for, you know, I have Mark Rober in it, Andrew Zimmern, the chef. I have Katie Milkman, Angela Duckworth. I have just remarkable people talking about how to be remarkable in this free online course. So that's another thing you could do. That could be step one too.
We're going to get this linked up in the show notes, and I'm taking a look at this right now in real time.
And all right.
I know it's something that I'm going to do. It's something that I'm going to get my kids to do. Maybe we'll do this together as a family. You mentioned,
yeah.
And I know Mark's, all right. I know Mark's in your book, which that'll be an easy sell for them because they do enjoy learning from Mark. Guy, this has been such a
Mark Rober.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, that's hilarious. Yeah. I mean,
they,
you know, I made a very directed effort to put people in the book that Gen Z would recognize. And Mark Rober is one of those people, along with Olivia Juliana, who's a neighbor of yours in Houston, Texas.
So we're going to have a conversation with her as well. I appreciate the conversation, Guy.
All right.
That we have had today. Thank you so much for sharing and imparting your wisdom. This has been an absolute pleasure and an honor.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for this opportunity. And any of you in the banking business that has a mobile deposit app that automatically puts the picture of the check into the album, you let me know. Maybe I'll switch banks.
we'll see if we can make some connections or deductions or just inspire some thinking there to make banking even that much more remarkable. Guy,
all right. Thank you.
Thanks again for joining me for another episode of the Banking on Digital Growth podcast. As always, and until next time, be well, do good, be the light.